We have a supply of natural gas that can last America nearly 100 years. We have a record number of oil rigs operating right now, more working oil and gas rigs than the rest of the world combined. So do not tell me that we're not drilling. We're drilling all over this country.
Few things have been more volatile during this president's tenure than trying to blend our energy needs and climate future.
The time has come once and for all for this nation to fully embrace a clean energy future.
But on President Obama's watch, fracking became a household word, and 80,000 new oil and gas wells were drilled across the country. Today's new extreme energy extraction gold rush may prove to be the president's most profound environmental legacy.
We, it turns out, are the Saudi Arabia of natural gas. We've got a lot of it.
It sounded so good. If we suddenly have an abundance of natural gas where we can switch from burning coal to burning natural gas, it'll be good for the environment. How good can it get?
Live from the Genesis Art Supply Building on North Elston Avenue, just this side of the concrete-encrusted banks of the North Branch of the Chicago River, it's The Mike Novak Show, still Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program, heard every Sunday on Q4 Radio and at MikeNovak.net.
Good planets are hard to find, temperate zones and tropic climes, true currents and thriving seas, wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find.
He's not the most interesting man in the world, but he does stay thirsty. Here he is, Mike Novak.
What do you think she meant by that? All right, here we go.
One more time.
One more time. All right, let's show up at Q4 Radio early on Sunday morning and do the Mike Novak Show thing. Good morning, everybody. As I said, we're on Q4, 1680 AM, whatever that means to you. And sitting on my left is Ashley Williams. Good morning, Ashley.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good. I'm glad you're here because you helped me set up the first guest, who we'll get to in just a second. But let me tell folks what we're doing on the show, and that's a ton of stuff today. Good morning on a Sunday. It's cold and rainy. So what else is new in Chicago? Does it seem like it's been cold and rainy like for the last, 17 weeks, something like that? it does. Like every day I get up, I go, okay, well, it's raining. Wow, there's a surprise. Oh, look, there's snow. Yeah, there's a bunch of snow on the ground yesterday, and people are all freaking out. And
it's like Groundhog's Day.
You know, and it's right. Well, but it's the 10th of April, and this is Chicago. Now, in the age of climate change and global, you know, I can't say global warming because Rick DeMaio will beat me up. And he says climate variability. That is his phrase. Climate variability. But in the age of climate variability, we expect that it's going to be 90 degrees and sunny in Chicago in April. And I think a lot of people want that. And those are the people I want to whoop upside the head with a rolled up newspaper. No, really, they go, why can't it get warm? Oh, stick around for a couple of decades. It'll get warm enough for you. You won't be seeing this snow on April 10th anymore. Or maybe you will. Maybe what'll happen is you'll see 3 feet of snow on April 10th as the climate waxes and wanes and runs wildly, careens, all right? Careens over the planet. So that's Chicago. And on the show today, we're going to start by talking to a film director who obviously knows something about climate variability and the effects of fossil fuel energy on our planet. His name is John Bauermaster, and he has directed a film called Dear President Obama, The Clean Energy Revolution Is Now. And Ashley, you're bringing it to the Chicago area, at least for one of the venues, right?
I am, yeah. I'm bringing it back at home in Ottawa, Illinois. It's going to be premiering at Roxy Cinemas on Thursday at 7 p.m.
That's cool. And you're speaking there, aren't you? Aren't you doing a little...
I'm hosting it.
You're hosting it. Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of the same thing, isn't it? That's close to the same thing. And how is it that you came to do this?
Yeah.
How'd you find out about this?
So actually, John actually personally tapped me himself to
host
the film. Yes.
Wow. You get a beer ding for that.
Well, I've been in contact with his friend Jeff Kloss for quite some time now. Uh-huh. Jeff is a frequent collaborator with John's partner, Natalie Merchant. And he's been a longtime supporter of me for about the past 3 years now since my petition launch on MoveOn.org against the Mississippi sand frack sand mine near Starved Rock State Park. And Jeff had reached out to me when John was first beginning filming for this film. And he was hoping that he would get the opportunity to come out to LaSalle County. That didn't happen. He was able to film some of the frack sand mining in Wisconsin, but he kept me in mind, and he contacted me recently just a few months ago, and he said, I want to do a film screening in LaSalle County, and I think Ottawa would be the perfect place.
Really? Yes. Yeah, well, it would, because of your connection to frack sand mining, which is a connection to fracking, which is a connection to fossil fuel energy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, we will get to John in just a second. He's hanging on, but I'm going to let you know what's going on the rest of the show. Around 9:30 or so, we switch gears a little bit and talk about a brand new event next Saturday, April 16th, called North Shore Veg Fest. And in studio, a couple of women who are involved in that, Carol Dianca, and I didn't even ask her if that's how you spell or how you pronounce her name, and so we'll find out. You know, that's the thing about radio. If you're writing something and you write a news story and the name is there, you just spell it. Okay, I'm hearing a woo-hoo, so I got it from the other room, so I think I pronounced it correctly. But you never, you know, that's the other hurdle you have to cross is how to pronounce a name. And she... is with an outfit called Food Not Meds. Excuse me. And you can actually go to foodnotmeds.com. They're one of the sponsors of the first annual North Shore Veg Fest. Joan, I've got Joan coming in, and I don't know if you pronounce her last name Levin or Levine. So... There's always a gotcha in here, but they're both here in the studio and they will correct me if need be. And we will talk about why eating vegetables might be good. Is that a big fat duh or what? No, but it's amazing that we have to keep saying it over and over and over again to people. Isn't that interesting? In the second hour, I'm very excited because I'm going to have Representative Elaine Nekritz of the... Fighting 57th District of Illinois, and Deborah Shore, Commissioner for the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District of Greater Chicago, longest name ever for an organization, and they are going to be talking about a House bill that's in committee, but that would help folks pay for controlling rain events around their homes. And this is such a great idea. You got to wonder why it came up, because usually the good ideas fall by the wayside. I'm happy to have them. And Deborah Shore is going to be here in studio. We're also going to talk about pharmaceuticals in our water supply, which is an issue. And if I may just say at the outset, when you're done with your medicine, don't throw it in the toilet. Don't throw it in the sink. What do you think you're doing? And this is one way. We're talking about a possible Cook County ordinance that would help people properly dispose of their pharmaceuticals. So that's the second hour. And then, of course, Rick DeMaio weather, 10:45 as always. And we'll ask him, why has it been snowy and rainy for 17 weeks in a row in Chicago? And I'm sure he'll have a great answer. So with that, let us go to the Skype and bring in John Bauermaster, the director of Dear President Obama, the Clean Energy Revolution is Now. Hi, John. How are you?
Yeah, good morning. How are you guys?
We are doing great. And have you and Ashley, you haven't actually met in person, I assume.
No, we haven't.
No, I've not met, but, you know, I am a native Illinoisan. I grew up in mostly in Rockford, up on the border. There, learned all my bad habits in Wisconsin.
Big Cheap Trick fan, right?
Well, Cheap Trick actually, when they were Fuse, played at our high school proms.
Cool. That's great. Well, yeah, that gets a beer ding for that. All right. When did you flip into filmmaking?
Well, I'm a journalist. I started as a print journalist. Actually, I've written a dozen books. I have a long relationship writing for National Geographic and many, many other magazines. But probably 15 years ago, we started seriously taking, every time we went out on expedition for National Geographic, we would take pens and paper, but we'd also take video cameras. So we started making films. I think I've made 10 films for National Geographic. And in the last few years, I continued the filmmaking, but focused on stories with really strong, powerful environmental messages.
Well, yeah, I got to ask you something about that, because it seems as though people start out, I keep running into people who start out as journalists, and they're print journalists, and then they evolve or move into different areas. Is it because it's more fun to do filming than it is to sit at a table, solitary table, and write?
Well, that's a very good question. I make that comment a lot recently. I got into filmmaking because I liked the camaraderie of the teamwork, which is quite different than the solo effort of writing all by yourself. But we've had such an intense couple of years with so much going on. I'm kind of looking forward to going back to just being myself with a pen.
Really? Okay. Well, you've actually worked with a Hollywood star, because Mark Ruffalo is the narrator of your film, and George Brigandi, who's sitting in with me today here, observing, and he and I were talking before the show about all the jokes you can make about, okay, is Mark Ruffalo angry about the environment? You don't want to get him too angry, because you know what'll happen. And I'm betting you're getting those jokes left and right, John.
Yeah, the Hulk could make an appearance at any time.
See, I didn't say the word Hulk, okay? But George here said, you know, maybe that's a reason why Mark's interested, because he's so green. Okay.
Well, the thing about Mark's career is that he has done so many different kinds of films that everybody recognizes him from something, whether it's the Avengers or these rom-com things, or from The Spotlight, which won the Academy Award this year.
Of course. No,
but my last three films, Antarctica 3D, After the Spill about the coast of Louisiana, and this new film, Dear President Obama, have all been narrated by Academy Award winners. Tilda Swinton, Melissa Leo, and Mark Ruffalo.
Wow. You have a track record there, dude.
Yeah, we're on a roll.
That's great. That is fabulous. And I understand Mark is also quite an environmentalist.
A great environmentalist, super guy, super smart, super committed. We've made big efforts joining with him to try and encourage more of his Hollywood colleagues to get behind environmental issues, and it's working. We recently did a toxic tour of downtown Los Angeles, where we got an electric bus and we took 40 to 50 Hollywood folks, including Leo DiCaprio, around and showed them where this kind of horrific process of drilling goes on right in the middle of downtown Los Angeles.
You know, you could do those Hollywood tours, and you could say, okay, here's where, okay, and I'm trying to remember who the latest water stealer was. Oh, that was, what's his name? Magnum P.I.
Tom Selleck?
Tom Selleck, he's a water stealer. So you could say, okay, folks, get your cards out. This is where Tom Selleck steals his water. And if you're lucky, you'll see him show up. He'll hang around here for a while trying to steal water. And, you know, you could have a toxic tour that way, the bad habits of the Hollywood stars.
Yeah, I'll leave that one for you.
Okay. Let's Ashley, you got to jump in here, because you're the one who's bringing this to Chicago, and you did talk a little bit about it, but you must have a lot of questions that you want to ask John. I obviously you want to see the film, first of all, so do I.
Well, I'm going to be seeing it on Wednesday when he premieres it here in Chicago at Uncommon Ground. The Food and Water Watch is facilitating that hosting. So I was curious, John, with your last film, so Dear Governor Cuomo, you have Dear Governor Brown, and now Dear President Obama. What kind of prompted you to make this like Dear series? I'm curious because it is just another installment within all these other films you have been doing.
Yeah, well, it started here in New York, where I live. Mm-hmm. I've lived for the last 30 years, when it was clear that the fracking was coming to New York State. We saw evidence of what was transpiring across the border in Pennsylvania when fracking boomed there, and it resulted in lots of water contamination, air contamination, kind of the industrialization of rural towns and communities, the division in communities between people who wanted it and didn't want it, et cetera. And we just thought, this is not what we want here in New York State, which, despite whatever impression you might have of New York, it's an incredibly rural and agricultural state. Mm-hmm. And we just didn't think that oil drilling and natural gas drilling belonged here. So, and this was in 2012, mm-hmm. The Governor Cuomo here was getting lots of pressure from gas and oil industry lobbyists to bring at least test wells into New York State. But we knew that once they brought in test wells, that would be it. They would just start, they would continue and grow. So we organized a kind of this unusual concert protest in Albany at the state capitol, where we brought in musicians and scientists and environmentalists and actors. We put on basically a show that argued against drilling and fracking. Well, we filmed it, and I made a film called Dear Governor Cuomo, which became a pretty effective tool in combating the oil and gas industry, which, of course, is the biggest industry in the world. Mm-hmm. So, and then in December of 2014, the governor of New York convened his cabinet, asked his health commissioner and the head of the Department of Environmental Conservation what they thought about fracking after several years of hard study, and they said, it's not for New York. So... and since then, yes, we made a Dear Governor Brown film. I did that with Mark Ruffalo, aimed specifically at Jerry Brown in California, who we think of as the most green politician. But California is the third largest producer of oil and gas in the country. They drill 300 new wells a month. So Jerry Brown has an easy time traveling around the world, encouraging other states and other nations to leave fossil fuels in the ground. But back home in California, he'll never say that because it's such a big part of his economy. So we've made a direct appeal to him. And then this Dear President Obama is the result of nearly 3 years of filming in 20 states, 135 interviews across the country, both with experts on the subject and the victims who grow increasingly in every socioeconomic class, every, urban landscape, suburban landscape, mm-hmm. rural landscape. I mean, the statistic that opens the film is that 17 million Americans live within a mile of a new gas or oil well.
Yeah, that's
an amazing statistic mm-hmm. right there. And it brings up that whole question of Barack Obama, who is somewhat of an enigma, if you ask me, in that he's done so many good things and so many things right and so many things that leave you scratching your head. The all of the above policy that he had for energy in the United States is one of those things that leaves me scratching my head. I mean, it seems as though he had the opportunity to push us vigorously in a clean energy direction, and he really didn't. In fact, during his watch, as you've noted, we do more oil and gas production. We've become independent. That the thing that we searched for decades finally happened under Obama's watch, of all people. Do you find that kind of odd, John?
Well, I mean, I think the president has evolved in his relationship to environmental issues during the course of his 8 years. When you think of Barack Obama, you don't think instantly of a green guy. You think of him as an urban city guy. He plays basketball, he golfs, maybe he goes boogie boarding. you know, but he, until last summer when he went to Alaska, I'd never seen him in a pair of hiking boots or in, you know, out in the great outdoors, so to speak.
Well, okay, if you want to go down, if you want to go down that road, who's the ultimate green guy? George Bush, who's putting on the boots and going out and chopping brush.
Or Ronald Reagan.
Or Ronald Reagan. There you go.
But to his credit, the president in the last couple of years has truly caught on to the impacts of climate change and stood up to climate deniers, et cetera. And that's the ask of this new film, is that there are some things that he can do with one, you know, signature that would help these issues. One is to stop drilling on federal lands, which is seems to be silly, and specifically to get his EPA to enforce some of the studies they've already done. His EPA has discovered water contamination due to drilling and fracking in Pennsylvania, Wyoming, Texas, but they've been kind of reluctant to push those studies for fear of aggravating or alienating the oil and gas industry. So I think the president needs to make sure before he leaves office that, that there's more kind of transparency on that. And, you know, I just think that he's learned a lot, and we're asking him to do a few more things before he leaves office. And then, of course, we're going to put these same questions to whomever is the next president.
And if it's on one side of the aisle, they will listen. And if it's the other side, probably not very much.
That is correct. That's correct.
Which, you know, and then here's you're right. You're right in one thing, in that he has evolved, the president, and we're headed in the right direction. And it's frightening to think that this could be all undone on Election Day.
Absolutely. But the one thing, one of the many things we try and point out in this new film, Dear President Obama, is that you don't have to live in a state where they drill in order to suffer from the ancillary businesses, which is what's happened in the Midwest, in Illinois and Wisconsin and Minnesota, where, you know, a big part of the fracking job involves that fine silica sand. In Ottawa, where Ashley lives, you know, that sand used to be consumed by the auto industry for their glass making. But when the auto industry abandoned Detroit and moved to, you know, Mexico and beyond, that demand dried up. And all of a sudden, that industry dried up in Ottawa and other places. But with the boom in fracking, which requires that silica, it's been really good for business in parts of the Midwest, though not particularly good for the landscape nor for human health.
No, not at all. And the reason Ashley's here today is because now we're going on three years and like three and a quarter years since I first found out about the frack sand boom in LaSalle County, Illinois. And that's how I met Ashley. And I've been covering that story for a little over 3 years, and how, and it started with a lawsuit against Mississippi Sand LLC, which wanted to build an open pit mine across from Starved Rock State Park, in which is the jewel of the of state park system in Illinois. And here's the sad part: they won, and I've been covering this for 3 years, and I found this out at the Good Food Festival, when I ran into Albert Ettinger, who's an environmental attorney who's been on that case, and I said, "So how's the case going?" And he said, "Oh, it's over.
They won in the fall.
They won." And did you see it anywhere? Did you see any coverage of this? Not much.
No.
Not really. I mean, probably your way, Ashley, I would imagine.
No, I mean, I recently just found out about this too.
That, all right,
they were embroiled on this lawsuit since 2012.
So that's part of what's the background for you, John, is that LaSalle County, and I'm so Albert's going to be on the show May 1st, and I told him afterward we're going to celebrate May Day, go throw some bricks through bank windows just for the heck of it, but he's going to be on the show to talk about this court decision, which means that Mississippi Sand, if they want to, can build their open pit mine across from the most beautiful park in this, maybe not the most beautiful, but the one that most people come to in the state of Illinois, Starved Rock State Park. That sand blows around. I know, because Ashley took me down to LaSalle County. The whole quality of life in that area is affected by it, because you can walk out on a fine summer day, and if the wind is blowing, you're being hit with silica particles, and you're inhaling them, and they're getting into your eyes and your nose and whipping you. And as you pointed out, John, this is what accompanies.
This is the cost of the boom.
Right. But right now what's happening in LaSalle County is a lot of those companies are not doing much because the price of oil has tanked. And so the activity is down. But as soon as the price goes up, that activity is going to start all over again, isn't it, Ashley?
I mean, that's what we assume so. Yeah, we're seeing mass layoffs across the board, and particularly in Wisconsin. And recently, Northern White Sand, which was a notorious environmental offender. I mean, they were the ones that were getting reported to the EPA the most, and that's in Utica. That was the particular mine that got annexed into Utica. They just recently closed their doors because of the glut, essentially. They also only had one buyer in Texas. So it's a small victory. But again, like you said, it is only maybe temporary until we see, you know, the markets return back to normal again. But right now it's just, you know, a slowdown everywhere.
But you must have noticed that too, John, as you were – how long did it take you to make this film?
Well, we've been working on it for about 3 years.
Okay. So if you've watched the prices tank while you're doing this, which – affects everything. You know, there's several years ago, we had a big battle in Illinois about what the law was going to be for fracking. And it pitted environmentalists against each other, and there was name calling, and people accused other environmentalists of being sellouts because they were actually sitting down with legislators and industry people. How dare they? And some people feel as though the environmentalists got played. And yet, you don't hear anything right now. And I think it's because there's no market. But as soon as the market comes back, I think the boom will be on in Illinois as well.
Yeah, I mean, the oil and gas industry has invested billions of dollars in wells and infrastructure. They're not just going to walk away from that. You know, they're going to wait for the market. You know, the oil and gas industry historically is boom and bust, and it's at a low ebb at the moment. But unless we change our demands, you know, our need for energy, it's certainly not going to go away. And until we truly get on a renewable bend and start putting the monies that we currently put into subsidies for the oil and gas industry, which obviously doesn't need it, it put those monies into really expanding our investment in new technologies for creating energy from anything other than fossil fuels, you know, we'll be stuck with oil and gas.
Now, I'm not doing my job properly here. That's John Bauermaster, who is the director of Dear President Obama, The Clean Energy Revolution Is Now. There are two screenings in the Chicago area this week. The first is at Uncommon Ground this Wednesday, April 13th, and that's at 6:30 p.m., Uncommon Ground Restaurant at 1401 West Devon Avenue. The next day, are you at that one too, John?
Yeah, I'm at both of these events.
Okay,
sure.
Great. And then Roxy Cinema in Ottawa very next day. What time is that one?
That's going to be at 7 p.m. from 7 to 9 p.m. downtown Ottawa.
Okay. Now, since you're the filmmaker and you have been so gracious as to come on the show, why should people watch it? I mean, that's what we've been talking about, but sell the film for me, John, a little bit here.
Well, you know, I make films that tell environmental stories. And this one is addressed to President Obama, but it's not particularly critical of the president. It's an invitation. We lay out the science. We lay out the stories of the victims across the country whose lives have been impacted either by health or economy across the country, and just invite the president and, to be honest, every elected official from county clerk to congressman to whoever the next president is, to look at these films and reassess their stand on in this case, gas and oil production. The highest compliment I can get, and it happens at virtually every screening, is someone will come up to me, some really smart person will come up to me and say, I had no idea. You know, whether it involves the involvement of silica sand or these bomb trains that deliver oil across the country and have a tendency to derail and blow up. Just to the fact that, as we said, 17 million Americans live within a mile of a new oil or gas well. That doesn't count the rest who live next to old oil and gas wells and abandoned oil and gas wells, which can be problematic on their own. So, you know, if I guess while the films are entertaining, you know, my friend Mark Ruffalo narrates this film, does a great job. His name will help lure a few people who might not otherwise wander into an environmental documentary. But the intent of the film is to be educational, but also entertaining. We want you to walk away kind of with a smile and some some feeling of hope rather than walk out bummed out.
That says it all. That's good. John, really appreciate you taking time on a Sunday morning to talk to us. I'm glad you're coming to town and that you're presenting this to the Chicago area. Who should see it? I appreciate your message when you say most people don't know, or a lot of people don't know. And they don't what they don't understand also is that it's all connected. You know, it's one thing to have fracking and then the water has been contaminated, and then there's the silica particles flying through the air in LaSalle County, and people don't know that those two things are connected. Nobody's paying attention to the stuff behind. You know, this is the kind of stuff that's getting, like, wiped off the front page entirely right now. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm glad you're going to be in town, John.
Well, you've got a primary here in New York on April 19th, and I think these issues are going to come up heatedly in the Democratic debate running up to April 19th, the issue of oil and gas production, and specifically fracking, because both Hillary and Bernie have slightly different takes on what the future.
Well, at least somebody's talking about it, because
I guarantee it'll get talked about here. I think they have a debate on April 14th, so the subject will get some airing amongst the Democrats. The Republicans, I don't have a lot of confidence that issue will come up.
Yeah, don't hold your breath, folks.
I'll close with what Mr. Trump has to say about fracking. He's convinced that in a general election he would win New York State because he'll promise people that he'll bring fracking to New York State where it is currently banned. He says so that everyone in New York can, like Pennsylvanians across the border, drive a Cadillac, which go and look at how badly the water's been contaminated and how sick it's made people in Pennsylvania. I don't think that's the kind of promise that's going to really sell people here.
Oh, no. You know, when I went to D.C. and I broadcast from the National Mall in 2013, when there was the march against Keystone XL, and people, they showed up from Pennsylvania and other places with jugs of water, and they were yellow, they were brown, and they said, "This came out of our tap."
Yeah, I'll bet I know those people.
Yeah, you probably do. You've probably interviewed some of those folks.
I think we did,
yeah. We probably interviewed the same folks and didn't know it.
Yeah.
John, thank you so much. Good luck on the film. Congratulations on it, and I can't wait to see it.
Great. Well, thank you so much for sharing.
All right. Take care. Have a great Sunday. It's the Mike Novak Show on Q4 Radio, 1680 AM. Ashley Williams is here. Thank you for doing that and bringing our attention to the film. And I hope a lot of folks come out. Like we said, it's at Uncommon Ground on Wednesday at 6:30. It's at Roxy Cinemas in Ottawa, 7 o'clock on Thursday. And you get to meet the lovely Ashley Williams, who's hosting. So you got to go down there. You got to show up. I hope there are folks listening in the area who will do that. All right, let's move along with the show. Now, if you've followed my nomadic career on radio over the past decade or so, you've noticed that one thing remains constant: my association with Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, meaning that no matter what I've written in more than 13 years in my column on the inside back page, they haven't fired me yet. And I'm going to hit the bell for good luck. The March-April issue of Chicagoland Gardening is out on the stands right now, and it features articles by folks who are on this program, this very program, Mr. Brown Thumb, a.k.a. Ramon Gonzalez, and he's talking about the Ginkgo Organic Gardens in the Uptown neighborhood of Chicago. Beth Botts, who's been on the show and has her brand new book out, which we talked about several weeks ago, is also in the magazine. Lots of great articles, columns, and regular features, and I haven't even mentioned the extremely useful resource guide, which comes out only once a year, and which tells you how to find everything horticultural, from garden centers to arboreta to seeds to books to classes to you name it. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, a publication of state-by-state gardening magazines. Whether you're in Chicago, other parts of the Midwest, or the South, call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
It's not just your garden. It's the way you live. And there's so much to know. But you have help. Bonnie Plants. Now with Bonnie's app, Homegrown, you can learn about veggie and herb varieties, track and record your garden with photos and notes, share on Facebook and Twitter, and so much more. How'd you ever grow without it? Get Homegrown with Bonnie Plants for iPhone and Android. The more you know, the better you can grow with Bonnie.
Trying to weather the housing market? Consider replacing your windows and siding. Remodeling Magazine says they're some of the nation's most popular projects today.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling and energy needs. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
This is kind of an appropriate song as we go into this segment. I mean, it's hard to eat wrong if your lips are sealed, right? Okay. You're supposed to... All right. I had a studio audience last week, and that was really actually kind of cool because then they would laugh at my stuff. We need to do that. Bill, we need to do the live audience thing here. I need the feedback. What?
You need your own Ed McMahon.
I need my own Ed McMahon. Well, I thought Ashley was my own Ed McMahon today, but she's...
I'm also doing your Facebook.
That's right. You know what?
Someone needs to do it.
And in the scheme of things, if you're doing the Facebook, that's your job. That's fine with me. I do not have a problem with that. I'm happy to welcome into the studio, and I guess they did pronounce it right before, Carol Dianca. She is Carol Dianca, MSCNSLDN. LSMFT. That's an old joke. Yes, there are some people who get it. Okay, there are other folks in the room who get the joke. Boy, you know, a lot of those, the jokes that were like standard in my youth, they don't apply anymore. It's folks don't, they don't get that stuff anymore. So anyway, she's the author, and the book is in front of me, of Real Food for Healthy People, a Recipe and Resource Guide. How cool is that?
Thank you.
And sitting next to her is Joan Levin, who decided she will call herself assistant organizer for North Shore Veg Fest, because you're both involved in North Shore Veg Fest, the first annual, give it a beer ding, which is at National Lewis University in Skokie, 5202 Old Orchard Road in Skokie, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. next Saturday, April 16th. See, yes. I got that out early. Isn't that great? All the important stuff. So, okay, how did Veg Fest come together? Why are you doing this? Aren't there a lot of festivals like this? Does the North Shore not understand that they need to eat their vegetables?
Well, we hope they understand it. It came about purposely kept small so that it would be a smaller venue that would be mainly educational. There's a lot of Veg Fest events that go on around the country and around Chicago. Some draw 30,000 people. Some draw a couple thousand. We're keeping.
There's
this
one out
small.
In Naperville that's like a huge deal.
Huge,
which
yes.
What's the big? What's that one?
It's Veggie Fest. I think.
Is it Veggie Fest?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, but this is by design kept smaller for the North Shore because there's been nothing like it for this area of Chicago, and it's large enough where we have a nice breadth of topics and exhibits, but it's small enough to keep it intimate for the people that attend so that they can learn something. They're not standing in long lines and enjoying the venue.
Did you and Joan like get together and say, hey, let's do a Veg Fest?
Well, it's about a 3-year project or 3-year thought. I actually went to some of the communities along the North Shore and asked them if they would be interested to sponsor it, because really my mission as a nutritionist is to raise awareness and to inspire dietary change so we can be a healthier nation. I didn't get a lot of traction with the various communities. So I do, as a community outreach, I do have a meetup group that meets once a month. It's been meeting for about 4 years, and it's called Plant-Based Nutrition for Life. And Joan Levin is a co-organizer. So I said to Joan and the other co-organizers, let's just do it ourselves. It's not going to happen on its own.
You know, that's how those things happen, you know.
Yes.
I think Ashley understands that. You just say, well, nobody's going to do this, so I better do this, okay?
Right.
And
mentality.
Exactly.
Yep.
And I understand you have a wonderful speaker who's going to be there, Dr.
Yes.
Terry Mason, the COO of the Cook County Board of Health. And
I have not heard him speak. But tell me why he's being brought in here.
Dr. Mason hardly even needs much introduction. He's well known around the area and nationally. He was interviewed in the famous documentary Forks Over Knives. He was a urologist with his own private practice for about 30 years, but he is very much dedicated to a plant-based lifestyle. He works with, he is responsible for public health for Cook County, and he believes strongly in dietary modifications. He is a total vegan, very dedicated, and we are very, very fortunate to have him at VegFest, speaking at VegFest. He's going to speak for an hour at noon, from noon until 1. And he has a very busy schedule. He speaks all over the world. So the people that come and hear him will really leave with a basic education about the benefits of plant-based nutrition, and they will be inspired to do more for their own health.
Forks Over Knives, that's not like Forks Over Omaha. That's a different book I was thinking,
right? That's a different book.
Okay,
yes.
that's complete. You know, Dr. Mason, I mean, if he sounds like I'm going to cop to it. I hadn't heard of him before. I don't know him. Mm-hmm. You know, what's he doing in Cook County? He's doing that well. That's great. What he talks about dovetails with what you preach and what you've obviously written about. It seems to me, now maybe I'm hanging out with the wrong people, but people actually are getting it, are starting to understand that their health is really, really connected to their nutrition. But I have a sense that the folks that come to Q4 and work here and are in the environmental community and the gardening community, which I'm associated with, do get that. So do you feel like you're still trying to beat down doors?
Well, I've been interested in nutrition for 25 years. Actually, it's been a lifelong passion, and I've been following the trends along. I would say I'm more encouraged today than ever before because plant-based nutrition or vegetarianism or veganism is no longer such a joke, as we're starting to find out what has happened to our food supply over the last 50 years. It's been subtle, and it's been taking our national health down the wrong road.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think to answer your question, there's a lot more interest.
Yeah, I heard a statistic yesterday. I went to Band of Farmers. Give a shout out to the Band of Farmers. They had their annual talent show at the Hideout yesterday. And I stopped by for a while and listened to Jody Osmond from Cedar Valley Sustainable Farm speak. And he gave me this statistic that just kind of blew me away. I buy meat from him. Okay, I'm not a vegan. I'm not a vegetarian.
It's okay.
But his meat, I know, is raised sustainably. Yeah. And it's really important to them that they do this. And there are a lot of outfits small. And they're small. They're obviously small. And he said that he has about 3,000 chickens. All right. And he was talking about contract farmers who raise chickens for major outfits. All right. And for a contract farmer to make the same profits that Jody makes on 3,000 chickens, they have to raise about 250,000 chickens.
Wow.
And if that's the case, you know, all you have to do is extrapolate and go, those conditions, they're not going to be good. And it's not good for obviously it's not humane for the chickens. It's
yes.
not humane for the farmers.
Right.
Because they're making nothing on these, and it's almost like slave labor to get these products out, and that's where we've gone in the wrong direction. You know,
yeah,
with our
yeah.
I'm going to be talking in several weeks on this show. Crate Free Illinois is going to be on the show, and they've got a new app, and you can use your app when you're buying your food to tell you if the food was raised humanely, and grown humanely, grown sustainably,
mm-hmm.
and that
Wonderful.
Sort of thing. It's more about livestock than it is about plants, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So I just say that because it only takes a couple of seconds of research to find out that a lot of what we're eating is not only not sustainable, it's not humane in any way, shape, or form.
And it's not good for the environment. It's actually killing the environment.
Killing us. Yeah, killing the environment, killing us. So
I see that you're a gardener. And by the way, let me reintroduce us, Carol Dianca, who's also with Food Not Meds. You can go to foodnotmeds.com and get that information. And how many books have you written now?
I've written two. The first one is really the story of how I got back to the garden in order to be healthy. It's a short story. This one I'm really very proud and pleased about. It was published in January. And
it's a very nice book. This is a lovely book. Yeah. It's called Real Food for Healthy People, a Recipe and Resource Guide. Who's it published by here?
Hippocrates Publishing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's an
All the usual suspects.
All the usual suspects,
and,
yes.
And on your website, I hope, too. I always I try to get folks to go to folks' websites. If they go to Food Not Meds,
absolutely.
They'll find the book.
They'll find it. Mm-hmm.
We got to get Joan in here for a second. Slide that microphone over. Hi, Joan.
Hey there.
Joan Levin. And she's actually the person who shanghaied me at the Good Food Festival and said, you got to talk to Carol. We're doing this thing. We're doing the North Shore Veg Fest. And so glad to have you in the studio. Thank you for coming by.
Well, thanks so much for having us, Mike. This is going to be a really, really great expo. It's small, but it's going to be very carefully selected. And one of the things that we're very proud of are our exhibitors and our food vendors who will be there to give you some samples of how terrific veggie cooking can be. Our food vendors will include Soul Vegan, which offers plant-based dishes featuring traditional foods.
But now, the food vendors are basically restaurants. Is that what we're talking about?
These
here?
Are restaurants, and some are private chef operations.
Okay.
And Soul Vegan offers these traditional foods at reasonable prices. They have outlets throughout the Chicago area, so you can find their products in many stores. Purple Sprout Cafe is a new operation up in Dundee featuring organic plant-based ingredients, a lot of raw food specialties that are really, really yummy. I've been up there, and they serve wonderful foods. And a Certified for Life instructor, Diane Garber, of Willpower Your Day, will be offering plant-based, protein-rich, heart-healthy, gluten-free foods, and you'll have a chance to sample this all. Also, among our exhibitors, we're very proud that Kay Stepkin, whom some of your listeners may remember because she wrote the Veggie Cook column in the Chicago Tribune years ago, she is putting together something called the National Vegetarian Museum, and she will be rolling out information about that.
Where's the National Vegetarian Museum going to be?
Right now, it will be right here.
In Chicago?
I believe it's going to be in Chicago. I don't know if it's going to be a bricks and mortar thing yet, but right now it's a project, and Chicago is really part of the very interesting history of veggie food. Also, we'll have Keep the Beat, a wellness physiologist instructor named Stuart Thilmani. He will be demonstrating the use of a tower garden. A tower garden is a vertical garden that you can even have in your home, in a sun porch, and grow veggies at home. So he'll be demonstrating that. Sherry's,
they have a bunch of those out at O'Hare.
I believe they do.
Yeah, and yes. they're growing veggies there. And I read someplace, Kathleen was showing me something, I don't know, a week ago or something, or a couple of weeks ago, and somewhere there was some statistic that all the restaurants at O'Hare exclusively use the tower to provide all their veggies, and I thought, oh, come on, that can't be possible. So I'm not sure.
Well,
but they, I know they do use them, and it's a great display, and it's good for people to see those tower gardens.
And how nice to have in your home. Just pick your salad fresh that night. Along those lines, Sherry's Greener World, which sells nutritionally dense living microgreens. They can be delivered right to your door, and they're alive. You just cut them off their roots, so you really have the freshness and the full nutritional value. Mm-hmm. Sandhill Family Farms will be there featuring their locally grown produce.
I interviewed her last week.
They're a wonderful organization.
Yeah. Not last week, but at the Good Food Festival.
Right,
yeah.
Right. There are two family farms in Wisconsin, and you can order boxes even delivered to your home, which is very convenient for many people. And we'll have a vegan physiologist with North Shore Medical Group. And also, one of the great things will be that Carol Dianca will be on hand. If people want to ask her their particular questions, she'll be there in an Ask the Expert capacity.
Great. Well, Carol, sit back down there.
Oh, yeah. And one more thing. We'll have a couple of food demos, one of which will be given by a mom and her daughter who will be doing a kid-to-kid demo on making healthful snacks for kids by kids.
I see we're getting some tweets in there. I've been neglectful of the Twitter machine here. Annie Haven out in California. Hey, Annie. How are you? She says, amen, free range, grass-fed, you know me, and Mupu Tea, and that's her product, Mupu Tea, hashtag Mupu Tea, lots to say on this, actually says lost to say on this, I think she meant lots. It's great to see you there, and I see that Celesta is listening, and... Sarah Batka wrote earlier when we were talking, I prefer the term global weirding. That's good. Thank you, Sarah. Sarah, I need you in the show. Sarah Batka from Chicago Master Gardeners. And speaking of gardening, Carol, I've seen photos of your garden. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
What are you doing anything at the moment? I know it's early.
You got your
mm-hmm. spring veggies going?
I've got spinach and lettuce started. That's the
I'm so jealous. Cold. I've been meaning to do that for like 2 weeks, and then I got sick, and it's like I'm not going out in this cold. I've got the thing set up and the soil ready to go, and I just haven't gotten out to do it.
Oh wow! And it's a perfect time, especially with this rain and even the snow. And then I've got garlic growing from last fall that I planted.
Excellent.
Yeah, and it's
you know, and I think that's a you know. Let's do a couple of minutes on gardening here because I haven't done any gardening today, really. And folks look outside and they go, oh, my goodness, it's so cold and rainy. And people who grow their leafy greens in the spring are going, oh, this is perfect weather.
Yes.
This is just perfect. And that's the thing you learn when you start to garden is that you look at it. There's always a good, you know, yeah, dead of winter, minus 20. Yeah, you're not growing anything. But when it's 40 degrees and raining, even 35, those plants, they hang in there. They're perfectly happy. And they like it cold. They like it cool. You know, I always hope for a cool spring. I don't know, you know, I know a lot of folks are out there saying, gosh, I hope it gets warm. I'm always saying, no, I want it cool. Why? Well, my daffodils have been blooming for 2 weeks now with no signs of stopping. I know that the leafy greens are going to be really, really happy at this time. Like you said, spinaches and lettuces.
Yep.
Snap peas like it cool. When it gets warm, they start to bolt. Somebody sent me a thing the other day. Do you grow cilantro?
No, we don't care for cilantro. Flat parsley.
Mr. Turk grows cilantro. He's got his hand up. And that's a tricky one. That's a really interesting one because it gets too warm. That bolts and it sets the seed and it becomes coriander. You can't have it too cold, but it's going to prefer a cool condition and you're going to get more cilantro when things are cool.
I love gardening. What happened to me when I started gardening was I became very appreciative of every season because in the winter it's planting and this early spring like this, things are coming up in the summer. I even like it right now when there's not a lot of leaves on the trees because the sun is more intense on these plants we're trying to grow.
Yeah.
And gardeners have to believe in tomorrow. You have to be optimistic if you're going to be a gardener. I love that.
And that's how you know about real food for healthy people.
Absolutely. It's
when you grow it yourself, you're invested in it. You have a stake. So what are you doing a presentation next week? You're going to answer questions. Joan said you'd be answering questions. So you do actually do a presentation?
I won't be doing a presentation. I'll be announcing Dr. Mason and then I'll be back at my exhibit answering questions and I'll have my book there. And in 3 hours, I know it's going to go very quickly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, those things have a way of doing it. And it's got to be heartening for you when people do ask questions and they want to know how to be healthier and by eating the right foods.
And just some small changes, dietary modifications can have huge benefits.
All right, give me a for instance.
Asking people to crowd out the junk food that they know that shouldn't be on their plate. Just crowd it out with more fruits and vegetables. That's huge.
Fruits and vegetables. You know, and if you're having a hard time, what I've discovered, if you want your quota of fruits and vegetables, probably the easiest way to do it is a smoothie.
You know, you put that stuff. Yeah, well, you're not sure. That's not a good.
I'm not sure.
Why? Because it depends what's in it.
It depends what's in it, and you can really pack a smoothie with a lot of fruits that have sugar, heavy sugar.
Okay.
And then you're drinking down this, even though it's a natural sugar in the fruits. You're just really spiking your blood sugar, and that's could be not so good.
Okay.
Either.
So what would you, if you're doing a smoothie? What do you put in it?
Well, I've kind of maxed out on smoothies, but
I haven't yet. Okay.
All right. I would say a lot of greens,
sure.
Not a lot of fruit,
uh-huh.
Maybe a green apple, but yeah, to watch it.
What about a banana?
Got high sugar in the bananas.
But potassium too.
Oh, well, if you put a kiwi in there, you'll get more potassium than a banana.
All right. I'm going to try a kiwi then.
Try a kiwi.
But
yes.
And they're tart.
I think Joan wants to say
yes,
something.
Yes, Joan. Pull the mic over, Joan.
Yeah, I want to ask you a question, Carol. I've heard that digestion starts in the mouth, and that by exposing our food, by chewing it, by letting it be in our mouth for a while, we actually start the digestion process more efficiently.
That's absolutely correct, Joan. Digestion does start in the mouth. So by chewing, you do release, you begin to release those enzymes. And when you've pulverized things in a blender or a smoothie maker, you could actually be changing the nutritional content.
You're breaking my heart here.
I'm
you are
so
just
sorry.
You are just breaking my heart.
I'm sorry.
Oh, man.
You can chew your smoothie.
Okay. I won't chop it up as fine. Huh? Okay.
I taught a class yesterday on breakfast ideas, and we did a lot of different ideas of what you can do other than smoothies.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay. All right. See, you think you know something, and then somebody tells you you're all right. The first annual North Shore Veg Fest, sponsored by Plant-Based Nutrition for Life and Food Not Meds, is next Saturday, and it is at National Lewis University in Skokie, 5202 Old Orchard Road in Skokie, Illinois. It's from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., so it's a short time, just 3 hours, so stop on by. Thank you guys for coming into the studio. I really appreciate that. All right, we're going to head to the second hour of the Mike Novak Show. Let me ask you a question, actually. Are you tired of the same old big box store genetically modified clone till you drop bee assassin garden center plants? You say you want something really different? Yeah, but you're buying the same daylilies and hostas that everybody else has. Garden with plants that have thousands of years of natural design behind them and that have been working for thousands of years with our local pollinators and other fauna. Garden with native plants. Natives are the natural choice, and you can get them locally from Natural Communities Native Plants online at naturalcommunities.net. And I want to give them a ding because they're a brand new sponsor of the Mike Novak Show. I'm very happy to have Natural Communities Native Plants. If you want to go green, the truly green choice is natives. Natural Communities Native Plants are locally grown and sourced, and they have more than 150 species native to the Chicago region. They use online shopping and mail delivery, and you can discover the world of natives in person at their local green events. Plant with Chicagoland's native plant source. Natural Communities Native Plants. Go to naturalcommunities.net.
Captain's log, stardate 42326.1. The Enterprise is under attack by an apparently hostile life form. Mr. Worf, status report.
They appear to be perambulating vegetables. We are being stalked by stalks of asparagus.
That is incorrect, Mr. Worf.
Mr. Data, be more specific.
Asparagus officinalis, or killer asparagus, was the subject of a very popular 21st century tome by the brilliant author Mike Novak.
Mike Novak. I'm familiar with his work.
Of course. Attack of the Killer Asparagus is required reading at Starfleet Academy.
Tell me more, Mr. Data.
He has been variously compared to Mark Twain, Dave Barry, and Gwynoch of Ningledore.
Captain, shields are failing.
Thank you, Mr. Worf. Mr. Data, options.
Captain, it seems to be available online at aroundtheblockpress.com.
Aroundtheblockpress.com. What do they have to say?
It appears that Mike Novak is a slapstick every gardener, taking all our self-delusions, mishaps, and confusions and playing them for big laughs.
That's not very helpful, Mr. Data.
No, it is, however, highly accurate.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show, still Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program.
broadcasting live every Sunday from the Genesis Art Supply Building on North Elston Avenue on Q4 Radio and at MikeNovak.net. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Who just wandered into the studio, the Opulent Studio at Q4. Oh, you've not heard me call it that before, Bill? Yeah, Opulence is our middle name here. it's certainly mine.
We consider ourselves the Cadillac of Yugos.
We are the Cadillac of Yugos. That deserves a ding. Very nice. I like the way you put that. But it's your connection to the Balkans and that area. That's okay. Thank you so much. Deborah Shore is the commissioner, one of the commissioners of the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District of Greater Chicago. We're happy to have, as I said, Deborah Shore in the studio and on the phone in just a second, Representative Elaine Nekritz from the 57th District of Illinois. Hi, Representative Nekritz. It's Mike Novak.
Hi, Mike. How are you this morning?
I'm great. Thank you so much for being on the show. And Deborah Shore is here. Say hi, Deborah.
Good morning, everyone.
Hi, Deborah. How are you?
You guys know each other a little bit, don't you? You've worked together on various things.
A little.
But let's start right out of the gate here about House Bill 4659. It is a bill that is, as you've mentioned, is in committee right now. And it would help folks deal with rain events. And we've talked about on this show before, and this is one of the chief jobs of Commissioner Shore, of course, is to deal with rain events in the Chicago area. And can you explain, Representative Nekritz, how this would benefit folks who are victims of these all too common now? Once, you know, we used to talk about once in 500 year events, and actually, Deborah Shore, you've talked about that on my show, a once in 100 year event, and what it means. We'll get into that in a second, but let's talk about the genesis of that bill. Representative, if you could start, thank you.
Sure, the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District has really been on the forefront of trying to figure out ways to reduce flooding and mitigate the impacts of the severe rain events, as you mentioned. They've done a lot of work and maybe about as much work as they can do in the public arena, in the areas that they have, on the streets and the deep tunnel and the quarries and all kinds of things that they've been able to do in the public, where they have access to public property. There's a lot of rain, though, and infiltration and water coming from private property. And that, while it has a huge impact on their system, they don't have the ability to impact and try to reduce that right now. And so the goal of the bill is to create a cost-sharing program with municipalities that will then allow private property owners to take advantage of some dollars and improve and prevent water from coming off private property and private residential property into the sewers and overtaxing them.
And you've had to work with MWRD on putting this together. How did that collaboration happen?
I have worked with the MWRD almost my entire tenure in the legislature. I represented previously a district that was cut in half by the Des Plaines River, so flooding was a huge issue in my district. And when I first took office, there was no one in Cook County who was trying to manage stormwater. So in 2004, I worked closely with the MWRD to give them management authority over stormwater. And from there, I've probably carried a bill, if not every year, at least every other year for the MWRD to try to give them more tools to deal with all the jobs that they have.
And this is Commissioner Shore. I want to say that Representative Nekritz has been a terrific champion, not only for the people in her district, but throughout Cook County, by helping to shepherd and pass legislation that is expanding the district's authority to include the ability to partner with municipalities to buy out willing sellers in flood-prone areas, and we've begun doing that, and to expand the suite of tools in our toolbox.
Are we making headway in that regard? We've talked on this show before about, our friend Sarah Batka said, what does she call it? Climate, global weirding. That's it, global weirding. And that, and we are in the middle of this, and we have these events. I have to tell you, I'm your constituents. I don't live in your area, Representative Nekritz. I'm in Chicago. So I'm under the purview of the MWRD, of course. And I can tell you that in the last several years, I've had issues with water in my basement. And it kind of started when they fixed the water mains in the street, all right? And I imagine that happens a lot. But the point is, if you look at what the Center for Neighborhood Technology is doing in their Rain Ready program, they point out, and you know this, Commissioner Shore, that you don't have to be by the Des Plaines River to have flooding. We have created landscapes now where things run off, that they're impermeable, and you can flood almost anywhere in a major metropolitan area, and you don't have to be near a body of water. So that's got to mean that we really have to address this and expand to everybody. And how do we get those people on board? How do we make them aware of what they have at their disposal, you know, laws like this?
Mike, you're exactly right that things are changing, and it's due to a number of things happening all at once. The sewers that lie under our city streets are owned and maintained by each municipality, and they were laid down 50, 60, 70 years ago with a design to handle a storm the size of happens at once every 5 years, or a 1 in 5 times chance of happening every year. And beyond that, they're either going to fill up and back up into our basements or overflow directly into a river or stream. Those are combined sewers that Chicago and 50 of our older suburbs have. But we're also seeing more intense rainstorms, and that, I believe, is a symptom of climate change, that are dumping enormous amounts of water in a very short period of time in a short and limited area that overwhelms the capacity of our sewers to capture this water and convey it to the treatment plants. And we're building out our landscape. We're paving over backyards. We're adding additions to our homes. We're tearing down older homes and building bigger ones, all of which is displacing more water during rainstorms into these sewers.
That's actually a really good point, and maybe Representative Nekritz could address that, which is, are we causing even more problems by changing the footprint of the buildings we have, and that is to say, putting McMansions on lots that were never meant to hold them?
I couldn't agree more with Commissioner Shore that is part of it, you know, and we've got parking lots and decks and, you know, you name it, with every time we make a surface impermeable and rainwater can't soak into the land, it runs off more quickly. And so we, you know, as Commissioner Shore indicated, we overwhelm the sewer systems, and that creates backup and floods and all the symptoms that we are seeing from that.
So you've got this bill, and this is going to enable the MWRD to help people. How would they approach you if this passes, Commissioner Shore?
So the goal is to be able to add another couple of tools to the things that the Water Reclamation District can do to partner with municipalities and those that are interested and willing to do some cost sharing with local homeowners to install prevention programs like an overhead sewer or a backflow preventer, but also to install cisterns that would capture rain off of roofs and keep it out of the sewers, giving them more capacity to do their job.
Would that also include a pump to get the water out of the cistern?
Presumably, it hasn't been designed yet, and it could be done so in a number of different ways. There are now smart valves that can be installed that are tied into weather telemetry that can know when a storm is coming and release the water that's held in that rain capture system into the environment, possibly into a rain garden or a permeable pavement or a vegetated ditch. And so you'd know you'd have that 2,000-gallon capacity distributed throughout a neighborhood to capture water and keep it out of the sewers.
That's Deborah Shore, who is the commissioner for the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District of Greater Chicago. Representative Elaine Nekritz is also on the phone. Representative, it's one thing to deal with water in this urban setting where you might have a little backup, but as you mentioned, you've got the Des Plaines River there. The worst-case scenario, it seems to me, is people who live on the Des Plaines River. You can't really address that, can you, with individual homes and fixing their water needs? Can you?
All the things that Commissioner Shore just mentioned that impact flooding and the speed at which water flows into the sewer systems and causes backups there, I think are all the same problems that have caused the Des Plaines River to continually flood. The Des Plaines River didn't really flood until the mid-1980s. If you talk to the people that live along it, they didn't have any problem. And so, but with the constant urbanization and some other things, that's created a problem. So we've been partnering with the MWRD, and I have to say that, you know, Commissioner Shore and the MWRD have been fabulous to the residents along the Des Plaines River and some of the municipalities, especially the Wheeling Park District, and building a fabulous facility there. But that is all, you know, they built some flood walls, but also try to, you know, the kinds of things that we're talking about now will all impact the flooding in the Des Plaines River, because if you can keep the water out of the river, then it doesn't flood.
You know, that's really very interesting. What you're saying is we are our own worst enemy here in many ways. And it's something that I'm aware of, that we do, we build things and we don't really look to the future, especially in terms of our commercial properties where we have the asphalt paving. I'm always shocked when I'm in Chicago and I see somebody, there was a shopping center near where I live recently and they repaved it. And I thought, well, wait a second, if you're repaving it, why don't you take the time and make it, permeable. Let's find some way to release some of this water and get it back into the ground. And yet there's a lot of the same old going on right now. This is also going to require rethinking and getting people to understand that you can't do things the same way you used to. And some of it's developers, some of it's private owners, but we have to move forward. And speaking of moving forward, again, the bill is HB 4659. Representative, you said that it's in committee right now, right?
It is. And Mike, before you leave that other point, though, I just want to say that Commissioner Shore has been on the forefront of exactly the kind of initiatives that you're talking about, and has been, you know, thinking about and pushing the MWRD to do some really creative things to try to get permeable pavement and to provide rain barrels and do all the things that are kind of small ball, but when you put them all together, they add up to very significant impacts on the flow of rainwater.
All right, I want to get back to the bill though for a second, because the question is
it is in committee. It's due to be heard this Thursday before the House Executive Committee, and so I'm sure the representatives of the MWRD will be there to testify, and we're working the committee members to make sure that they understand the bill and will be supporting it.
Let's look at the bigger picture here, and that is the dysfunction that's going on in Springfield. This bill is going to have a price attached to it, like a lot of bills. I mean, this is really important that people be able to mitigate the water damage and keep their homes safe. And yet, it seems like it's almost impossible to get anything done in Springfield. What are your hopes for this particular bill and for the General Assembly in general, Representative?
So this bill does not have any impact on the state budget. The MWRD has their own revenue sources. They have not asked for additional resources in order to be able to engage in this program. So Commissioner Shore can speak better to that than I can about how that would work. But this bill has no impact whatsoever on the state budget, and therefore the impact has no impact on it. I have no predictions on how we. What path will get us to breaking the impasse and resolving the state budget situation once and for all.
That must be a source of frustration to you?
Well, a significant source of frustration, yes.
I mean, it's a source of frustration to the average citizen.
And it should be.
Yeah, and it should be, yeah, because, we sit out here and all we can think is, will you guys just do your jobs, please? Can somebody, can we get a budget passed? And I know it's very complex, but, there you are in the middle of it and just one legislator trying to make things happen. I will just speak for the people I know who shake their heads and say this cannot continue. This has to stop. I don't know how that stops, but this is our feeling out here in Illinois. So.
Believe me, I hear it all day, every day.
I'll bet you do. And I'm not saying anything new here, but it's the first time I've had to speak to a state representative and say, hey, what's going on, dudes? Okay, well, thank you so much, Representative Neckerts, for being on the program today. I want to let folks know that if they're interested in getting this bill passed, you can go to my website, look at this week's show. I've got the link where you can write to your state representative or senator. It's a link that was set up by Rain Ready. They have more information about this bill, and you can fill out. They've got a letter written for you. You can pop your name into it. You can send it to your representative or senator. This is important stuff. I mean, it's not pension. I'm hoping that our leaders can walk and chew gum at the same time, that they can address things that have been bothering us for years, but also address new things like this Rain Ready program getting folks on board with it and passing something that isn't on the front pages every day. And that's why you're on the show today, because somebody has to talk about this, and I don't think enough people do. Representative Elaine Neckerts, thank you so much. I hope we talk again very soon.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you, Elaine.
And that leaves you in the studio, Deborah Shore, because this is not the only issue that we want to talk about. But this is an important one, and I'm glad to see that this is happening. So when it was actually Harriet Festing from CNT who sent me the information, I went, yeah, I'll do something on this. I want to do this. But the other thing that you called my attention to the other day was pharmaceuticals. Pharmaceutical. I get that question actually at Garden Talks about our water system, and because when, for instance, if I'm talking to people about milorganite, which is a biosolid, fertilizer regulated by the EPA, the only one in America actually regulated by the EPA, for those who don't know that milorganite is, and they've been a sponsor of mine for years, and Deborah and I have had these conversations in the past about biosolids, and unfortunately in Chicago we have a bad history, and people remember the 70s. They remember those products that were foisted upon them, and they were bad. We're smarter than that now. And the MWRD is coming around, and people like the Milwaukee District, which produces milorganite, it's human waste, okay? There's no other way to say it. It comes out of our water, but it's treated with bacteria. It's fired in a furnace. They have figured out how to get rid of the heavy metals. But people ask me, what about pharmaceuticals? And I say, that's a really good question, because there's really no way to filter out pharmaceuticals, is there, Deborah?
No, there's not, Mike, and thanks for asking. Everywhere I go to, people ask me, what should I do with my unused or expired medicines? I know that I shouldn't flush them down the toilet, and indeed you should not flush
any
medicine
ever.
Down the toilet or pour it down the drain, though we used to be told to do that. But now scientists are finding minute amounts of a whole range of compounds and chemicals in drinking water and in the water that's coming into sewage treatment plants. And we can detect them, but we can't remove them. And some studies are beginning to show detrimental effects on fish and other aquatic life that live in these waters full time. And so I've been promoting, and our agency is promoting, an expansion of safe, secure drug collection sites so people can dispose of their unused and expired medicine, whether they're prescription drugs or over-the-counter drugs, in a safe way, and so they don't accumulate at home.
One of the things that makes this difficult is the minute quantities we see. Folks say, well, what about the pharmaceuticals? And I have talked to scientists who say, well, when you look at the actual parts per million, they're quite small. But if we continue to do this, the population is only getting greater. And if people don't understand that they shouldn't be flushing these things away and pouring them down the sink, there will be more and more of this in our water supply. And we don't know what the tipping point is.
Cumulative.
Yeah. Well, as Bill says, it's cumulative. So answering the question now, it's like, well, am I going to be affected by this now? I would dare say it's really impossible to say at the moment, but it's not a good trend to have us putting pharmaceuticals in our water supply.
I agree, though I would also caution that detection does not equal risk, that just because we can measure these doesn't mean they're currently a risk to human health. They're in the parts per billion and parts per trillion, which is why we can't remove them at a sewage treatment plant. The cost
more imperceptible than I said. I was saying parts per million.
Right.
You're saying billion and trillion.
Correct.
And yet you're still concerned about that. So obviously the scientists you've talked to say this is an area of concern.
Well, and I think there are several other pieces of this, Mike. And the first and foremost is public safety, because when people don't know what to do with their medicine, they accumulate at home. In fact, I've heard that you have a drug dealer in your home and it's your medicine cabinet. And what happens is these accumulation of drugs become a risk to seniors who may accidentally mix compounds, to young adults and teens who rifle through medicine cabinets looking for drugs. It's been documented that 50% of the people who become addicted to heroin started through prescription drugs. And we've seen a dramatic increase in emergency room admissions and in overdoses due to prescription drugs. So the goal is to find safe, secure, and accessible ways for people to dispose of their drugs so they don't accumulate at home.
When you're talking about these drugs, there are drugs and there are drugs. I mean, there's Vicodin and then there's Robitussin. Are they all in the same group? Should they all be treated the same way? Or?
Well, they should all be disposed of safely.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe we want any of them getting into our waterways and our water supply, because we don't know how they interact when they are dumped into waterways. We may take a single drug in our bodies, but when they are excreted or flushed down the toilet, they get mixed in our environment. And so I would say don't put them in our waterways. Promoting a safe collection program is part of the answer. We also have to address how drugs are prescribed, how they're designed, so that our bodies absorb more and don't excrete.
Well, that's also part of what you're trying to do here is, and I posted this again at MikeNovak.net, you are also having a National Prescription Drug Take-Back Day on Saturday, April 30th, and three of the MWRD sites will be places where people... So, you know, folks will say, well, what do I do with my drugs? Well, save them up for this month, and, you know, put them all in that box and just take them in. If you haven't used them in, you know, 2 years, you're probably not going to use them now. At 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Calumet WRP, that's 400 East 130th Street in Chicago, at the Stickney, 6001 West Pershing Road in Cicero, and O'Brien at 3500 Howard Street in Skokie. So from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., people can just bring those drugs and they'll be disposed of properly.
Thank you, Mike, for bringing that up. And it's not only at several locations that the Water Reclamation District owns and participates in, but this is a national drug take-back day sponsored by the Drug Enforcement Administration. You can go to their website, type in your zip code, and it will list collection sites near you. Many municipal police departments or public health departments or village halls are also collection sites, but it's only from 10 to 2 on that Saturday, April 30th.
Yeah, otherwise, but that's part of why you're here too, because you're trying to get this ordinance passed, item 16-1983, governing the safe disposal of pharmaceuticals. And how would that work?
So currently there are approximately 80 collection sites in Cook County. 23 of them are at police stations in the city of Chicago.
So not every police station is a site?
No, not at all.
Okay.
And Cook County Sheriff Tom Dart several years ago saw the need to expand a collection program from the public safety angle, and he has installed collection sites at suburban courthouses, at the Cook County Court Building, and this measure that's been introduced to the Cook County Board would build upon and expand this program that Sheriff Dart has already administers and expand collection sites throughout the county so that there are no what might be called collection deserts, places where people live where there's no readily accessible site. It would also enable us to expand sites to some pharmacies, to hospitals and clinics, and would require the manufacturers to pay for the cost of this collection program.
How are the manufacturers about that? That's always an issue because we talked just the other week on this show about electronics recycling in Illinois. And the manufacturers, that law was set up so that the manufacturers would pay for it, and they've managed to, they're paying for some of it, and there was some good, and now there's kind of backsliding because they reached their quotas earlier in the year, and then there's no money to finish the electronics recycling. What about pharmaceuticals?
Well, this is building on programs that have already been successfully implemented and adopted in California, in a number of counties there, and in one county in Washington State. The costs are actually fairly minimal. It was estimated in Alameda County it would be about a penny for every $10 of a prescription. And
that's outrageous. I'm not paying that. A penny for every $10?
The ordinance, I would add, specifically prohibits manufacturers from adding the cost of this collection program
to the cost of the pharmaceuticals.
But we think it's minimal, and it is also fair and would lead to a much improved public safety, public health, and environmental protection.
Yeah. By the way, that is Deborah Shore, Commissioner for the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District. We only have a few more minutes, but I should get the number out there, 312-985-7834. 312-985-7834, if you have a question about any of this. I want to let folks also know that I posted the information about that ordinance that you just talked about that would give people more opportunities to recycle, I guess, their pharmaceuticals. There's a list of commissioners that who are not yet sponsors of the ordinance. And you can call them. Would you advise people to call all the commissioners or just their own particular commissioner?
I think it would help to call all the commissioners. I do believe that the chief sponsor may be making some modifications to the ordinance.
And who is the chief sponsor?
Commissioner Larry Sufferton.
Okay.
But those will be posted shortly, and we anticipate this may be taken up in May or June by the Cook County Board. It will really help to promote national leadership in this arena of extended producer responsibility and to really provide safe options for Cook County residents to dispose of their medicine.
Well, it just makes so much sense. Again, it's like the law, the state law we're talking about with Representative Neckritz. It just makes sense, you know, and it's nice to get common sense laws passed, and sometimes those are the hardest ones to get passed.
Mike, if I may just add one other thing, many of the producers are suggesting people should mix medicine with coffee grounds or kitty litter and throw it out in the trash. That still will contaminate our waterways, our groundwater, or our rivers and streams because we can't remove it at the treatment plants. And these compounds will eventually leach out of landfills.
Yeah, that's a really good point, is 'cause folks say, there are folks who tell you, well, you know, all landfills are lined. Yeah, but you know, other people will tell you all landfills will eventually leak. They will leach contaminants at some point. And it shows a profound misunderstanding of how, well, physics works. If you think that you can take these medicines and throw them into a pile of dirt and have it rained on and other things come down and it won't end up back in our water supply. No, it will, absolutely. So that's a really good point.
And even the lined landfills, Mike, that leachate gets conveyed through sewers to a treatment plant where we can't remove these chemical compounds.
Right. Okay. Before I let you go, I also noticed in something you sent out recently, you talk about the disinfection of our water, which is finally happening after, lo, these many years. I know it's a thing that you were fighting for. Give us a really brief history of that and where we are at the moment.
So this recreational season, which began in mid-March, two of the district's largest sewage treatment plants, the Calumet plant on the south side of Chicago and the O'Brien plant in Skokie, have begun disinfecting the treated water that flows through those plants, which means we've added an additional treatment step to kill the bacteria and other pathogens that remain in the treated water before that water is discharged into the CalSag channel or into the North Shore channel.
And this is something we started in 2011, right, where we...
The board voted to adopt disinfection at these two plants in 2011. We were able to install the facilities for less than $100 million when prior leaders were projecting it would take $1 billion.
And that was the big scare all along. It was like, oh no, we can't afford this. We can't possibly afford this. And meanwhile, people are out in their kayaks and their canoes in the Chicago River. That's not good. It's not a good combination. And we were told for many, many years, and the MWRD was one of those people who said, there's no way we can afford this. But yes, Ashley, sure.
I was going to ask, what is your thoughts on designing biodegradable pharmaceuticals and kind of where they're at with that?
I don't know where they're at with that, but I think we'll see a lot of innovation in how drugs are designed and possibly drug removal systems in our toilets that may be able to disable whatever compounds we excrete, and changes in how drugs are prescribed. We're already seeing that with prescription opioids, all of ways to address what we take and our bodies excrete. But I should also note that one of the major drug companies, two of the new drugs they're working on are for pets to address sleep problems with dogs and obesity. So as we have an aging population and care deeply for our pets, we're giving them a lot of drugs too.
Oh, dear. Oh, we're going to have all our dogs hopped up on stuff as well, and our cats probably. Very quickly, back to the disinfection, though. So the MWRD voted on this 2011, and it's interesting because I was at a talk by Carl Zimmering, who wrote a book recently. He's was at Roosevelt and helped start the Sustainable Studies Department there, and now he's in New York. He wrote a book about environmental racism in America, and I'm going to have him on the show to talk about that. But
he was talking about part of that is this idea that, you know, we had this river flowing through the city and we wouldn't do anything to disinfect it. And he said, yeah, I think it's being done. I think it's been done. I mean, he had no idea, and the people, nobody in the room, they were a lot of smart people, had no idea that. And I was there sitting on my smartphone because I went, wait a second, I think this is going on right now. And this is what you're saying. It's just happening for the first time in 2016 for this season that is going into effect, right?
We started it a year ago or last September at Calumet, but the Northside plant at Howard and McCormick went online in March.
Wow. And it won't really change things when we have overflow, right, because the bacteria will still get in there. But on dry days, we should see the levels go down significantly.
We have already seen that, and we're measuring what's coming out of the plant, and the levels of the bacteria are way below even what the permits require.
It smells better.
So it smells better? Are you near a river, Bill?
We're close to it.
All right, so Bill Turk's near the river. And he says it even smells better.
Well, that's terrific.
I mean, there's your constituent right over there. You should talk to him before you walk out of here. Deborah Shore, thank you so much for coming by. It's always great to have you on the show. And how do you like the new digs here? Here we are at Q4. It's revolution is in the air.
I'm home wherever you are, Mike. Thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Not a problem. And any final words that you have before we head out?
No, I think your listeners should be aware that the Water Reclamation District is doing many positive and progressive things. You've heard about several of them this morning. Just want to thank you for your support and encouragement.
Anytime. She sends me the newsletters, and they're about the most interesting newsletters I get. And I have a feeling you're actually behind writing some of that stuff. It sounds like you when the stuff. And that's one of the things that I like about Deborah Shore is she ain't just a politician. She's an environmentalist who became a politician. That's a big difference, okay? I've seen politicians become environmentalists, and that's a good thing. But it's really great when it happens the other way around. So we will talk again soon.
You bet.
You're listening to the Mike Novak Show on Q4 Radio. Rick DeMaio weather coming right up.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A+ by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
It's not just your garden. It's the way you live. And there's so much to know. But you have help. Bonnie Plants. Now with Bonnie's app, Homegrown, you can learn about veggie and herb varieties, track and record your garden with photos and notes, share on Facebook and Twitter, and so much more. How'd you ever grow without it? Get Homegrown with Bonnie Plants for iPhone and Android. The more you know, the better you can grow with Bonnie.
Nothing says pharmaceuticals like Rod Stewart. before I get to Rick DeMaio, I'm going to let you know that if you're tired of the same old big box store genetically modified clone till you drop BSS and garden center plants, I've got a solution for you. Natives. Garden with plants that have thousands of years of natural design behind them that have been working for thousands of years with our local pollinators and other fauna. Garden with native plants. I mean, it's not, you know, they're the new old thing or the old new thing. Whatever. Natives are the natural choice, and you can get them locally from Natural Communities Native Plants online at naturalcommunities.net and a proud new sponsor of the Mike Novak Show. If you want to go green, the truly green choice is native plants. And I've met the brains, Nick Fuller, behind Natural Communities, Native Plants. And his goal is for people in Chicago to be able to buy retail. It's you can find a lot of wholesale operations with natives that are specifically natives. Hard to find retail. And that's why you should go to naturalcommunities.net. He uses online shopping and mail delivery, and you can discover the world of natives in person at his local green events. If you go to his website, you can find out where he hangs out and where he's going to be selling plants. But, you know, probably you're going to want to go online. Plant with Chicagoland's native plant source, Natural Communities Native Plants. Go to naturalcommunities.net. Mr. DeMaio?
Good morning, Mike.
Hey, how are you, dude?
I'm fine. How are you this morning?
I'm good, except we were talking at the very start of the show. By the way, folks, meteorologist Rick DeMaio, always a pleasure to have you here. We were talking at the beginning of the show this morning about it's cold and rainy, and it feels like it's been that way for 17 weeks, okay? Every day I wake up, and it's cloudy, and it's cold, and it's raining, and and sometimes there's snow. What do you got to say? What do you got to say for yourself?
I thought snow was illegal in the month of April around here. Past April 8th,
it could be because we're the 10th today, and boy, yesterday that was significant, and sadly, it cost the life of a Chicago chef. There was a 15 car pileup on. Mm-hmm. And it was funny because that's not funny. Odd because
I know you meant that.
Yeah. No. Well, no. What I meant was I was looking outside my front door the morning after the snow, and the sidewalk was glazed ice. I could see it from the house, and I thought I said, "Oh, well, that's going to melt in about an hour. It's going to be gone." And it was.
If the sun hits it.
Yeah. As soon as the sun hit it, I knew that that's going to be gone because the ground's actually pretty warm. But I also thought, oh gosh, I hope nobody slips on that. And then I started thinking about the highways, and sure enough, that's exactly what happened. That was just sad.
And who knows, Mike? I mean, the Eisenhower oftentimes is like an Indy 500 race, it seems like that, and the inbound Ryan or outbound Ryan. I mean, people would actually use the shoulder of the CTA if they couldn't get around someone. And it, you know, it just goes to show you that. No matter what time of the year it is, if it's snowing out and you're going fast and there's too many cars in a, you know, in a small area in a short amount of time, and someone tries to change a lane and they misguide their route to some degree. Next thing you know, you got a 2-car pileup, which becomes a 5 and an 8 and a 12 and a 13. And you know, these things shouldn't happen, and it's terrible that it did. And obviously, whether it's a chef from Chicago or, you know, someone that we don't know, it's tragic either way, but it is, when I heard about who it was, I was like, man, that's a real shame. That's no way to go. It's almost like thinking when Bob Simon from 60 Minutes was in the back of a limo in New York, and the cabbie was going, or the limo driver was going too fast and was in an accident. Next thing you know, they pulled it out of the back, and it's Bob Simon at 60 Minutes. And you go, that shouldn't happen. But, you know, it's part of the tragedy of life. And it was really sad, but. Interesting that you mentioned about the snow and the ice, because I was actually talking to someone who I do some forecasting for snow and ice removal, and I mentioned to him kind of in a haphazard way on Thursday, I wouldn't be surprised if we get a burst of snow Friday evening in Chicago and northwest Indiana. It could actually coat the ground. He goes, yeah, but temperature's going to be too warm for it to actually stick. I'm like, no, it's going to get pretty cold after that. And he kind of flippantly said, nah, it's not going to happen. And sure enough, I sent him some pictures of the snow in my driveway, and, you know, a Friday night, and I showed the ice, and it looks like it's going to be a full salt, and next thing you know, they were out all morning Saturday salting, and something that, you know, if you don't do and someone trips and falls, you have a lawsuit on your hands because you're supposed to be doing it. So, yeah, very, very, very odd, and it all goes back to every once in a while we see this thing called, like, the Greenland Block, and the Greenland Block is basically this huge upper-level area of high pressure develops over Greenland. And when you have some of these late-season storms, which we always see develop over the New England northeast area of the United States and into parts of northeastern Canada, it always blocks these storms that typically move across the United States. It pushes them further west and further south, and consequently
we have ourselves a, you know, a cloudy, cold, stormy pattern. It's exactly what we're in right now.
You know, Bill Turk is here, and he wanted to make an observation about something you said, I guess, a while ago.
Last week, actually. Rick, you had called it, talking about a 10-day pattern. You even extended it out to possibly to 2 weeks, that we would be in this up-and-down pattern with some of these extremes. So you were right on the money with your forecast.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, oftentimes when you get into this time of the year, it's hard not to predict variability, but the variability has been extreme. And even after we, you know, got off the phone last Sunday, you know, and I was in Columbus and I'm looking at these temperatures just zoom from the 40s to the 50s to the 60s to the 70s, I'm thinking to myself, I don't think that's ever happened before. And sure enough, that temperature contrast that we had from Saturday to Sunday was the 13th largest temperature range we've ever seen.
Wow.
In the Chicagoland area. And then the next day but that night when the front came through, all it was kind of like the Berlin Wall between warm and cold weather just had to shift it south, and you went from, you know, one extreme to the other when you think about it from a political standpoint. But all that front had to do was come south of us. And then, you know, we had temperatures back in the 30s, but to have lake effect snow on Monday, and not only flurries, but this was snow that was sticking. And when I went to teach at Loyola Monday evening on the north side of the building, the ground was completely covered with snow. And I'm like going, wait a minute, it was 70 degrees yesterday, but it wasn't 70 degrees for long. It was only 70 degrees for, like, you know, a cup of coffee. You know,
but so I'll tell you, Rick, but what was so interesting about that last Sunday, I actually did some laundry and I hung the clothes out in the backyard. It was 70 degrees and the wind had to be like 20, 25 miles an hour. And by the time I finished hanging up the clothes, the shirts I put up first were already dry. That's how warm and how windy it was.
So you and your significant other got into an argument. Was that Mike? You had to use the outside to dry your clothes?
No, it's because the dryer's broken. That's why.
I see. It was one of those, like, the result of an argument when the plug is pulled from the wall and she gets points up.
No. Nothing like that.
But Rick, you would.
The atmosphere was not only dry, but it was windy and it was sunny. And there was not a cloud in the sky. And
no.
To go back to what we had, you know, Sunday evening and Monday when we had lake effect snow. So I got on the phone and I called a friend of mine at the weather service. I go, Ricky Castro, when was the last time we had the temperatures go from Saturday to Sunday and then Sunday to Monday like that? So he looked it up, and do you know that was only the fourth time ever in Chicago since 1871? We went from 30s to 70s to 30s, and both days on the 30s you had snow. That was only the fourth time ever, but in addition to that, that was the only time it happened in April. So we have never seen any weather like that. Now, granted, in recorded history, obviously, you know, we can go back 4,000 years, you know, to when humans roamed this part of the United States, and 8,000 years to the beginning of the, you know, the last ice age. You can kind of argue that point. But in recorded history, we have never seen a setup like that before. And then on top of that, we finish it up with 2 days of snow this week. So I'm interested to know, and I got to dig into some climate data to see when was the last time we've actually had 6 days of observable and almost measurable snow in the month of April. This has been quite rare, particularly after a fairly mild March.
And part of the problem here is that folks are going to look at this, and as I also mentioned earlier on the show, there's a lot of folks saying, gosh, I hope it – I just want it to get warm. And they forget about things like climate variability that you talk about. This is part of that mm-hmm. scheme. I mean, the planet,
yes.
we recorded
oh, yeah.
the hottest year ever last year, which came
right.
up upon the previous hottest year. And yet
right.
we lose sight of that because we got snow in April.
Yeah. And again, it's not the change, it's the variability. And I think that's what is beginning to, you know, freak people out. Now, here's a question for you, Mike. I was walking around yesterday and I saw a lot of daffodils that didn't look good. So from a standpoint of if the daffodil, and this may be a question that I don't know some of your listeners may have, if the flowering part of the daffodil is covered with snow and killed by temperatures that got into the mid-20s, I mean, we made it down
to 22 degrees above here. That's a hard freeze.
Yeah.
When you get a hard freeze, whatever is growing basically above ground could easily die. But does the daffodil still come back to next year?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
If it loses the bloom, what it needs is the foliage. As long as it's got the foliage will recover. You know, foliage probably isn't going to get killed to the ground, you know, unless we have a number of days in a row of hard freezes.
Right, right.
One evening is not going to do it yet. Might do some damage to some of the flowers. My daffodils
right.
actually popped back. They bounced back, and they look okay. But even
amazing,
if you,
huh?
it is. And but even if you lost the bloom on it, as long as the foliage is there, it's supplying energy to the bulb, and it will probably bloom again next year.
And I saw some magnolia trees as well here in Evanston. Bloom already with their flowers.
Yeah.
Those are going to be okay, or
well,
or maybe
that's
not.
It. They're really tender, you know. Magnolias. It depends on how long the freeze is, and it's possible that it did some damage to some of the buds or even some of the blooms on a magnolia. You talk about it. A hard freeze. It has to be below what 28 for 4 hours. Is that it?
Right, right. 28 degrees below 4 hours.
Yeah. So we had 22 for how long?
For 3 hours, 22 feet. Now, that was at O'Hare along the lakefront and only got down about 27 degrees. So I think areas generally east of Interstate 94 or 294, any way you want to slice it, probably didn't have the hard freeze as much.
Right.
But definitely areas to the north and west. And this also goes back, we've been talking about soil temperatures the last 2 weeks, because I've been keeping track of it in our conversation. Last week, 4 inches below ground level is 47. The week before, it was 50. I just checked yesterday, 4 inches below ground level, it was 35.
Wow. So it's weird. It's backtracking. Yeah, that is true. You know, but that does mess with plants, because weed seeds germinate right about 55 degrees soil temperature. So this
right,
is when you
right,
start to
right.
see your crabgrass and you see other things, the weeds in the in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're backtracking, it's delaying that
right.
germination. Usually you time it with the forsythias. The forsythia in bloom often means that the temperatures have gotten to about 55 degrees. Well, the forsythias have been in bloom for a couple of weeks, but as you said, we're backtracking. So what does that mean? I don't know.
But now as a devoted student of Rick DeMille's weather, he was also talking earlier about April being a variable month with extremes. What did you say, Rick? I think lows that could go as low as 17 and highs as high as 70s or something.
Almost upper 80s.
Okay. Okay.
Oh yeah. Our records right now are 86 and 16.
Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah,
and that's kind of unique to this time of year. So I'm guessing maybe the plants have some sort of built-in heritage.
Right.
Well, plants, native plants know the drill. Okay,
yeah, yeah.
They wait
right.
and they wait and they wait until it's safe to come up.
Right.
You know, they know it's not going to get to 10 degrees in April, or not likely to. It can, and it can set them back for that year, but they can come back the next year. But that's why, you know, you talked about magnolia. I just got a tweet from Snappy J Dog who says, Hubs and I are debating if our Jane magnolia is dead. Should it be blooming already?
Mm.
You know, kind of depends where you are. Does it have buds?
Right.
You know, look for the buds. Look for swelling on the buds. And if they're not there, yeah, you might have an issue. But I think in the colder areas, as you were saying, Rick, maybe in the outlying
right.
areas, some of those magnolias that people had, because they're not native to this area, they took a hit. And it's possible they've lost some of the blooms or all of them. I don't know. It depends on how long it's freezing.
I'm just looking at some of the regional temperature data this morning that came out about 10:15. And low temperatures in the last 24 hours, Barrington, Illinois was 24. The Botanic Gardens was 22. Down at Midway Airport, 24. I'm just looking at a couple of places. Mundelein got down to 21. And I think this was temperatures – that probably went all the way back to about maybe 7 or 8 o'clock Saturday morning. And even though readings below sod level, about 4 inches underneath sod, was about 43 at the Botanic Gardens, on the bare soil, it was 37. So we got a little bit of a bump with that sunshine yesterday. You know, April's sun is strong, but as you mentioned, if it's covered up with that little bit of snow and ice, it wouldn't be a bad idea. And I think this was really amazing. I saw this photograph of the groundskeepers at U.S. Cellular Field. The ballpark was covered with about an inch of snow, and they went out there with their lawn hose and literally wet the snow down, because that actually promoted melting and warmed up the ground. So I think if we get into one of these situations again, don't be embarrassed to go outside if you have snow on your grass, and it's probably not going to get much sun this time of the year if it's behind, you know, obviously to get, you know, a lot of shade. Go out there and wet your grass down. Wouldn't you think that'd be a good idea to warm up the soil a little bit?
It might. I mean, I don't. But it's a different story for cellular, because they need to use the field. All right, for the average homeowner,
it'll probably help at least melt the snow and get some of the sun rays down in the ground and warm the soil a little bit.
My point is,
Is that something that some of your listeners can do with the magnolia tree that may not be doing as well? Is it wrong to water the plants this time of the year to get the?
Oh, you mean you'd have to spray the? You know, it depends on how big your magnolia tree is too.
Right.
You know, because you got to spray that up and over the tree, and if it's a small one, you could probably get away with that. And you know, it's the horse is out of the barn, because when it's cold is overnight, because you're not doing that overnight.
Right. So, but I think what comes to light are these you know, the adaptive and mitigation efforts now that maybe your normal everyday gardener in this part of the environment, in this part of northern Illinois, has to now deal with in a highly variable climate. You know, the things that you never had to worry about before or did before, you need to do.
Yeah.
You know, and the science is there. And that's why so much I don't like to look at numbers per se. You know, numbers represent change. But it's really hard to put a number on a pattern. It's hard to, you know, you look at the way the Bulls have played. You know, they beat Cleveland last night. Does that mean they're a good team all of a sudden? No, because the pattern of the play has been poor, you know? So you look at the Blackhawks, you know, the last two games they lost in overtime. So did they not do as well? Yeah, but are they been playing better? So the pattern, you know what I'm saying? It has to do with where the arrow is going. You know, is it slanting up or is it slanting down? Not so much whether it's bending one way or the other. And if that means you have to stop and ask questions, you know, go to your local nursery or your garden store and go, what do you think? Do you think I should be doing this based on the fact that the weather's been cycle, you know, for the last month? And I think this is one of the things that people have to realize. You know, becoming your own little scientist is not a bad idea in certain situations.
Well, and the way you do that is observation, and you have to do it from year to year. You know, you keep track. This is why people like Beth Botts in her book, when I interviewed her the other week, said keep records so you can go back and say, okay, a year ago, 2 years ago on this date, this is what happened, and here's how the plants responded. But that doesn't change the fact, Rick, that as you pointed out, we've never seen this before in the history of recorded weather in Chicago.
Yeah, I know.
So how do you deal with that?
It kind of makes you tweak your own brain and go, okay, well, how do I deal with something like this? I know I had many people say, this isn't supposed to happen, right? And then someone said, no, but it does. It snows around here in April. I'm like, not after it's been 70 degrees. And you kind of look around and go, this doesn't happen. This is weird. You know, and you know, everybody, you know, and it's always good to go all the way back to the discussion of climate and climate variability and stuff like that. You know, are humans, you know, are the greenhouse gases that are being put into the atmosphere by anthropogenic activities increasing the chances of this happening more so in the future? Absolutely. You know, what does this mean from a standpoint of how do you, you know, begin to work more towards, you know, renewable energy? I heard this great piece on NPR over the weekend about the people who mine coal in Wyoming are losing their jobs. And the person was saying it's all Obama's fault because he did this and he did that. Well, you know what? It's more so the greed of the oil companies, which have produced tremendous amounts of oil that gets refined in the gasoline. We have a glut there.
natural gas due to an overglut of fracking and greed has caused us to have an overabundance of natural gas. And then Mother Nature just said, you know what, I'm going to be really warm for the next 2 months, therefore we're not going to use as much. And you know what? We have automobiles that are not using as much gasoline, so we're really not going to need so much. You see all the stuff that you guys made for me? We're not going to need as much. Therefore, the way economics works, the price of what you gave me is not going to be as high. Therefore, it's going to be less. And it was bad business planning. So therefore, you stop with the coal, you stop with the oil, and you go more so towards renewables. And that's where the argument should be going, not that president did this and now I'm losing my job. Well, you know what? People also don't work on Commodore 1000s anymore that were built by Radio Shack called Realistic, right?
Yeah, and Teddy Roosevelt was responsible for the decline of the wagon wheel industry.
I hate to sound like an ogre here, but that's what you have to do. To advance society, you have to also advance technology, advance your thinking, and think out of the box.
All right, but to get to your forecast and a very bit of practical advice before we do that, which is to say, obviously, we're in a pattern, or it's always possible in April that you're going to get really cold weather. So that means, you know, with your bulbs, really not much you can do. They're going to come up and they're either going to survive or they're not, unless you can cover them all, and nobody's going to do that really. But you have control over things like did you plant the lettuce and the spinach? Yeah, you can put a little row cover on them if it's going to be 22 degrees so they don't freeze. And then they'll then take it off when the temps get back up, and they're going to be fine because they like the cold weather. That's all I'd say about that. So so are we going to warm up, Rick?
Yeah. And actually, I sent you a few things that you can actually put on your Facebook page and your blog and other things that you relate to the podcast. This should be, and I'm saying it with a lot of certainty, this should be the last bit of snow. And I actually, after I walked the dog this morning, I actually saw still some snow on the north side of my building, and it was April 10th.
Wow.
This should be the last bit of snow that we'll see, hopefully, until maybe next November. The pattern does warm up. El Nino seems to be completely fading away, but at the same time, there seems to be a parade of weather systems that's going to move into California and most of the southwest United States, which is good news because early this week it hit 86 in San Francisco and 97 in Phoenix. That's way too warm, way too early out there. So whatever warmth that they get now is eventually going to push towards us. So the pattern does look like it eventually shifts into a more progressive pattern, meaning systems coming in from the west, not from the north, which is what they've been for the last 10 days. So I predict 60s this time next week and probably mid to upper 50s to low 70s the week after. So the next 10 to 14 days, near to above average precipitation probably every 3 days, a very wet pattern as well. And I think we can say goodbye to the last freeze. Well, not to the last freeze. I'm going to stay away from that.
Yeah, don't do that.
I won't do that, but definitely the last snow of the year, without a doubt, Mike.
Okay, I'm looking at the map you sent me, and it's like 70% probability that we're going to be warmer.
And more so, the overnight lows should be much warmer because we get in the southerly flow and cloud cover, which we've had some really cold overnight lows lately. But it definitely looks like things will trend towards a much more progressive pattern from the southwest. And also, good for precipitation. We could be easily talking about over the next 10 to 14 days, 2 to 4 inches of rainfall.
Wow.
And this is the time of the year when you want your rain. And the good thing about it, nothing in the way of any stagnant patterns, Mike. Stagnant patterns lead to flooding. This is going to be a very progressive. So the rain comes, we get dry weather. The rain comes, we get dry weather, which is what you want. No one wants a muddy yard when you start to really get into the weeds, so to say, in early May.
All right, Rick DeMaio. Always something new in the weather department, right?
Yeah, I raised the volume a little bit this morning.
Yeah, okay. Well, great talking to you, and we'll do it again next week.
Sounds good, Mike.
All right, take care. That's it. We're in overtime here. We ran a little long, but, Q4, I have that option. Now I have to go and edit the tape so it fits in 2 hours so I can do the podcast. But until next week, Ashley Williams and W.C. Turk, go green or
go home.
All right, you guys got it right. That's good. There we go.